and welcome to the Gerald Journal podcast. My name is Holly Hensley. I'm the librarian at Gerald High School, and I facilitate this podcast. But the real stars are our hosts, Sophia Perez-Robert, Arturo Trejo, and Stephen Yerk. They are all three smart and outgoing students here at Gerald High School, and they are excited to bring this podcast to you. They plan to interview interesting characters and paint a colorful picture of this up-and-coming town. Gerald's about a half hour north of Austin, Texas, and it is growing very fast and has lots of interesting things going on. So I hope you enjoy.
Hello, welcome back to the Gerald Journal podcast. My name is Sophia Perez-Robert. Fellow hosts are Arturo Trejo, Stephen Yerk, and our special guest, Ben Siemens.
Hello, and I am Ben
Siemens.
Siemens. Oh. Great start for season two, episode one.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Ben, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on.
I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. It's great to see you. Anyway, so obviously, you were originally born in Canada, correct?
Yes, in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Winnipeg, Manitoba. Nice. And you spent a lot of time living your life offshore on a boat going through the Western Hemisphere, right?
Yes.
Do you mind just kind of giving a simple, like, just kind of summary of, like, day-to-day life when living on that, how it's kind of different from life in Gerald, Texas?
How long was the trip?
Well, the trip was around a year and a half. We spent, a year and a half on the boat. We traveled, I think we got like 23 different countries.
Wow, that's a...
That's just a guess because I do not know for sure. But there's at least 23.
Subtle flex.
Well, yes, Arturo, it is a podcast. But... Yeah, so what would usually go down is our daily life was, if we weren't anchored in a marina or anchoring spot, we'd be traveling. And our longest sail was actually a whole week.
Oh.
Where we did not reach land, we did not see land for a whole week. It was just ocean around us. That was probably one of the scariest times, just because you're in the middle of nowhere, only ocean, at night, pitch black, except... luckily, we did have a buddy boat, it was called, which was a friend boat that they were more experienced sailors, and we traveled along with them, so we weren't completely alone out there, but it was just scary.
Let's say no storms, I hope.
Well, actually,
oh, no.
thankfully it happened while we're in port, but there was a big lightning storm. We were on land, but we could see this lightning storm, and we were in a anchoring spot with probably like 60 other boats, and a few of them got struck by lightning.
Oh,
thankfully,
wow.
It wasn't one of us. But what would usually happen when they got struck by lightning is it would go down the metal mast, tear apart all the electronics inside, and sometimes bust out the bottom of the boat and like cause it to sink. Thankfully, the boats that did get hit by lightning just they were completely wrecked, but thankfully no one was on them. Everyone was on
That's
shore.
Good.
Because there's a gathering at the local restaurant for all the sailors.
Sounds awesome and terrifying.
Yes.
Oh, it was.
That was a great...
Sadly, we were also very worried because our two dogs that we had with us on our journey were on the boat.
Oh.
Outside in the lightning storm.
I was supposed to... You abandoned them.
Ooh.
Not abandoned. They just can't go to the restaurant.
I was about to say. Restaurant rules.
Yeah.
I say even forget rules.
Yeah. Even with all of this, all the good and the bad, what compelled you to go on this trip for a year and a half?
Well, it was more of our family motto, like my whole family, our motto is life is an adventure. So that is basically why we moved from Canada to California, was because parents were like, we're done with the cold. We want to explore more. Let's move to California. And we've always had like, since Christmas is coming up, we usually don't do gift Christmases. Mm-hmm. We'll usually try to do some sort of trip. So one Christmas, we went to Costa Rica, rappelled down waterfalls, and did that sort of thing and like hike jungles. One Christmas we did a Europe trip because my oldest sister was an au pair in Paris.
Oh,
so
nice.
We had decided to go visit her for that Christmas. That's kind of like the whole gift. We got to be together as a family, ate so much cheese and bread. And after living 8 years in California, they grew bored of California. And my mom really wanted to travel. My dad really wanted to travel. So best way we could think of traveling full time was an RV. So we moved, we bought an RV. It was a Newmar. That's the type of RV it was. It was special because it had a kind of, it was a split story. So at the very back, you could go downstairs to the mat, like a bigger bed, or upstairs to two twin beds.
Oh.
So it was unique in that way. But we saw 46 United States in the RV and all Canadian provinces.
Wow.
We even took the ferry to Newfoundland, which is a Canadian province that is an island.
Hmm. That, it might be easier to ask this. Which states did you not see?
Hawaii, Alaska, Vermont, and I think Arkansas.
Wow.
Because really, who cares about Arkansas?
Yeah.
Oh, poor Arkansas. Okay.
Yeah. We were supposed to go and buy it, but then we kind of forgot about it and went around it because there was a detour we wanted to take, so got missed. Newfoundland is a beautiful place. At one point, we went up to a point overlooking the ocean. It was around like the afternoon. It was cold, windy, and we just watched humpback whales pass by.
Wow, that's awesome! And was this before the initial sailing trip?
This was before the boat. This was before the boat. I spent the past 3 years of my life traveling and homeschooled, but we'll get to that later.
So, out of all the things that you did—the RVing, living in Canada, going through all that—would you say that personally you enjoyed the more RV or the boat life?
Well, they both have their pros and cons. The boat is more exotic, and you got to really see. I would say the boat was a lot more different and fun and adventurous. But the RV was nice because I have three older sisters. All of them played college and or volleyball in college, and we would always go to their games every weekend. But in the RV, or sometimes we couldn't make. But in the RV, we could drive to them, stay in an RV park, and basically like live with them. So we got to spend more time with our family. But then once we moved onto the boat, that was a year and a half. We only we only got together once that year all together, and we saw them throughout because we always had guests on the boat. That was our like what we wanted to do was be able to have guests on the boat.
So I was about to ask how specifically on the boat life, how exactly was like the social norm? How did people get together? Was it like a big boat? Like, weren't you all just threw ropes around and made like. Drawbridges?
Well, no. So our boat, let's talk about my boat a bit first. It was a catamaran, so it had two hulls and then a living area over top. It had, I think it was 46 in length. So it was quite long. It had four bedrooms, four bathrooms.
Oh.
Very small bathrooms, but
they're
still bathrooms.
Bathrooms on a boat.
Just so how the social structure would kind of work is everyone had their own boat name. Every boat was named different, and you got to name it. So our boat's name was Tarika, which in Swahili means story. So we were writing our boat was our story. So that was our boat name. So if we wanted to talk to another boat, we get on our radio and we'd say, our friend's boat was named Azula. So we'd say, Azula, 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 this is Tarika, come in. We'd wait. They'd call us back and say, hey, you want to go to 74, channel 74. We'd go to channel 74 because it was a social channel, and we would talk like that. So that's how people would talk to each other. And since it's the ocean, phones really didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So the radio was the main way we would talk to people. So usually we did a lot of gathering of boats. Like we had a few close boating friends that we would like have a potluck. Everyone would bring some food and would eat. One of the things that we ate a lot though was sushi.
Oh,
really?
So in Martinique, there's this town called St. Pierre, and they always had a fish market every morning or most mornings. And you could go there and you could get fresh yellowfin tuna that was this big.
Wow.
That was huge. So it would probably be like 6 feet big.
That's a tuna?
A tuna. Mm. And we would get a slice, and that night we'd make sushi and sashimi.
Very nice.
Cool.
And so we would usually, we would have a lot of times where boats would gather together. We'd all bring sushi, sashimi on the boat. My dad, one of his meals that everyone asked for was assorted grilled vegetables, garlic, potatoes, and onions.
That sounds so good.
So let's say you're making lunch now.
Everyone loved it. So that's like we would usually go to a boat. They'd make sushi, sashimi. We'd bring some vegetables, some bread, and it would just be a party.
Very nice.
So cool. And so besides how you got into social groups, how you interacted with the other people on boats, what did you do during the time that passed, like on the week that you were on sea?
A lot of reading books. Kindle was my best friend.
What was your favorite like series?
So the series that I mainly read during this boat trip was a series of 40 or so books called Discworld, made by Terry Pratchett.
Oh, very nice.
Amazing read. I loved it just because it was satirical fantasy and it was humorous. I read every single one of those books and reread them a couple of times. That is mainly what I did with on trips and stuff, was read my books. Or we had board games, card games. I had a TV in my bedroom mounted on the wall, and we could hook up the PS4 to it and play some video games. So
very nice. Mm-hmm. So now kind of to go through the schooling, the home school, but in this case, I prefer boat school. It's something you've said before. I love that term. So can you kind of go through the basics of how boat schooling was for you?
Boat schooling was interesting. So we did have a curriculum following math, English, and science.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also supplemented that with just our own experiences. So one island called Montserrat was a victim of a volcanic eruption that basically – it only killed two people, but it wiped out half the island. Half the island's inhospitable. So they have a research center there. So we went to that research center. We learned about why the volcano blew up or erupted, just about the science of the volcano and how – so this is very interesting. One of the things that we learned there was do you guys know what a pyroclastic flow is?
Very basically. I know.
Give us a basic,
yeah.
It is basically a bunch of boiling hot rocks and rubble flying down a mountain over a cushion of hot air. And it can flow like at 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
And it's just anything that gets near it is just vaporized.
So a flying rock, essentially.
A flying cloud of molten dust and rocks.
Ooh.
Speeding down the volcano.
How big were these rocks?
They would be like a kind of like a mudslide. Like they were huge. And like half the island was basically
destroyed.
There was a three-story building. Two stories of it were underneath the ash. And a side effect of this volcano erupting was the coastline was 2 miles larger.
Oh.
Because all the rocks pushed it out and expanded the island.
Wow. Whoa. Okay.
So it's quite interesting that that is possible in nature, but that did happen. So,
yeah, that's cool. That is kind of cool, though, that you use, obviously not the giant eruption and half the island being wiped out, but being able to have like those sort of
real life examples.
Thank you for going through and
learning
yeah.
in your curriculum.
Uh-huh. So like we would also do cultural things. Like we would go to museums and such of the island's cultures that we're on. We took part in the regatta, which was a type of festival in Georgetown, which was one of the towns on it, which was one of the islands we went to, and it was a bunch of food, boat racing, and like a bunch of food and boat racing, and it was a festival, and we'd take part in that. We would walk the streets, we would get some food from the local vendors. Some of the food that we ate there that was local was a lot of seafood, a lot of seafood, jerk chicken, and jerk ribs.
What is jerk chicken?
It's like a special, there's a seasoning that they put on it and a sauce, and it's spicy and it's super good because the islands on there have amazing spices. One of the islands that we went to, Grenada, is called the Spice Island. And they are known for, I think they are the second largest nutmeg exporter.
Oh, really? Oh. Wow.
Uh-huh. And that is what they grow. They grow nutmeg. And they also export ridiculous amounts of chocolate. Best chocolate I've ever tasted down in Grenada.
That's what I have to add to the list of chocolate countries to visit.
Something. So, with all that aside, what was something that you all constantly had to worry about while out at sea, other than the weather? Or
if you got stuck in one place for too long that didn't really have amenities, you could be like without a laundromat, so you can't do laundry, wearing stinky clothes and underwear, getting low on supplies and food. That almost happened to us.
Oh no!
When we were, those are some stuff you have to worry about, and just you have to be wary of other sailors, because we were traveling at night one time. And there was a cruise ship. We're a small boat compared to a cruise ship.
Oh no!
Cruise ship didn't really see us.
Oh.
We had a. It was nighttime.
Oh okay.
And so we had to try to hail the cruise ship and say, "Hey, do you see us? Hey, do you see us? Cruise ship, do you see us? We're a small."
Oh, no.
They ended up responding in broken English, but they saw us and we acknowledged each other, so we were safe. Wow. So you always have to be watching out for your surroundings in case there is either a big boat that won't see you and other sorts of things.
Like pirates? I heard that was a big.
So where we sailed, thankfully there were no pirates. They're more near Venezuela and closer to Panama. But thankfully we never saw them, but we did hear a story from about friends of friends that it was quite gruesome.
Oh,
about pirates.
Ooh,
I was about to say.
Oh,
pirates,
yeah.
Are horrible. But there's a question that I'm gonna ask, just because I remember when I went down near Costa Rica, and those I had some run-ins with some tropical creatures that unfortunately stole some of my belongings. And yes, I do mean monkeys. I should have taken off that backpack. But so was that ever like an issue, like any of the native animals or stuff kind of getting onto the boat and causing, especially with your dogs
or
anything like that?
Not a lot of animals would get onto the boat because we're in the middle of the water. But one animals that did pose well, there's a multitude of sea life that is dangerous, from pufferfish, sharks, lionfish, even jellyfish.
Mm-hmm.
I was personally terrified of jellyfish. So
you just gotta bounce on the tops, not the bottoms.
That's a lie. Don't listen to Nemo. lionfish, a few of our guests that did come onto the boat hunted them because it's like. They're an invasive species. They aren't supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So they are they're good spear hunting, just so you can kill them and have some fun for sport. But you are able to eat them if you remove all the spines. And there's not a lot of meat on them, but it was something that they did hunt. Jellyfish were always – I am just afraid of jellyfish just because they're very hard to see in the water because they're translucent and just – they gross me out. I do not like jellyfish.
Fair enough.
By jellyfish, like, you mean like the itty bitty ones that might wash up on a beach? Or?
There are sometimes itty bitty ones. There's sometimes large ones. There was actually this one island where the coral and jellyfish had symbiotic relationships. So the jellyfish would flip onto its top and let the coral have the sun. And at night, they would flip over and start moving to a different spot. And it would be a coral / jellyfish like symbiotic relationship.
So the coral's protected because of
the jellyfish. Yeah, the coral uses the jellyfish to move around and be protected. The jellyfish has the corals that in the morning it's invisible to sea turtles and stuff. And it can't be eaten by sea turtles because no sea turtle will eat coral.
Oh, wow.
But one of the scariest moments was we were snorkeling in one of these areas that have these coral jellyfish. And we were looking at them. All of a sudden they flip over and start rising.
Oh no.
We just start booking it to our dinghy.
I was about to say.
And it was terrifying because they were slowly rising, like 20 of them.
Have you ever been stung by a jellyfish?
Thankfully not.
I was about to say, that's good. I was about to say. Sounds like an underwater horror movie.
Yes.
Jellyfish all rise, yeah. Rising.
That's
out
what
of
they should do instead of Jaws, a jellyfish movie.
Stingers?
Yes, stingers.
That's quick. I like that.
Okay, so.
Context Spielberg.
With so many countries you traveled, how many in total?
I think it was around 23 different islands or 20.
Whoa. And with all that, what was the place that was most memorable to you?
One of the places that was most memorable was probably Montserrat. That was the place that got wiped out by a volcano, half of it. It was just amazing seeing that nature can do something like that and completely destroy half an island. Another place that was very impactful was Grenada, which was a spice island. That was where we spent a lot of our time, and it was amazing just because it's there. They have their own culture. Like, it's a culture there. It's great food, great people. So on the island, the main way people would get around, because we didn't have any land vehicles, was taxis. And it would be the natives driving around these big white vans, and they would pick you up if you hailed, called them down, and you'd pay them. One of our we had a taxi driver that we always, like, we got his number, and he was the best taxi driver. He was our taxi driver, so whenever we needed him, we'd call him up and be like, "Hey, we need you," and he would come by, and he was great.
That's incredible.
So that was a friend that, like, we built a friendship with this taxi driver for the.
Like, a good trip.
Good friend to have.
For the months we were there, whenever we needed him, we would call him up and he'd be like, "I'm on my way."
Oh,
I was about to say, that's a good friend to have, especially in, I imagine that it was semi-crowded-ish just because it was a
very race. The Grenadian drivers were crazy. One time we're in a taxi that wasn't our friend, and they started having a race with another taxi to the next pickup spot.
Oh Lord.
That was terrifying.
You're here.
Yeah, I'm survived.
We survived.
How did you get from country to country? Like, isn't there like something legal you have, like, or is it some sort of visa or something?
So what we would have to do is that we would fly the flag of the country we're in. So how we had it, we had a Canadian flag, an American flag, and the country of the flag we were the country's flag we were in.
Mm-hmm.
So if we wanted to go, say, from Martinique to Dominica, we would have to take the Dominican flag down. Put up our yellow flag, which is called the quarantine flag, meaning you're coming in from a different country. And then with that, my mom, who is the captain of the ship, take all of her passports, go into customs, and she would do it. She would do all the legal stuff. Once we're finally in there, we'd have to raise the flag of the country we just entered. And that would say, now we are in this country. So we're visitors of that country. So okay, we would have to. So that's how legally we did that. And that was interesting to learn about, just because you never really think about it. Like, you actually have to do like passports and stuff when you're sailing and stuff. So we never had really thought about that. But then, like,
Can you just like leave the port of California and go like to another island or something?
Well, we left from Florida, but in California, we never really. The California, but yeah, in Florida, the Bahamas are only like a 6-hour boat ride away from Florida, and we would just pull up to Marsh Harbor, get out our put up the yellow Q flag, quarantine flag, get out the passports, go there, and they would admit us.
Wow, I was about to say boat law, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just like leave Florida without them telling them.
You would have to say that we are. Going, we actually had this thing that when we finally returned, we could just call in a number to I didn't know the specifics, but we were able to call in a number. They'd realize it was us, that we would give them our boat name and stuff, and then they'd say, "Okay, you're automatically checked back in, welcome back."
Okay,
I was about to say, that's better than the airport customs, we'll say that for sure.
Yeah,
it's better than border customs too.
Anyway, so. Obviously, you've spent a good portion of your last bit of your life traveling here. So how does it feel to kind of resettle back down in a small town? Well, small, we're expanding like crazy. But the somewhat small town of Jarrell.
It is refreshing. It is nice to finally be back kind of into a routine, because that was one thing that the boat didn't have, was a routine. Because we'd spontaneously be like, "You know what? We're going snorkeling."
It's a story. You're making your adventure.
Yeah, we're making our adventure. So now we're just – it's refreshing being back, settled, being in a routine. And it's also great experiencing just society, civilization.
Not surrounded by large amounts of water.
Yes, that is great. Not being surrounded by large amounts of water.
Or a random fish that could kill you.
Yes, or a random fish that can kill you.
We got snakes.
Yeah, Texas has snakes, but they aren't jellyfish.
Fair
or
enough.
Or eels. Ocean has eels.
Ooh. Have you seen an electric one?
Well, no. I only saw one eel, and it was quite big. The head was probably, I would say, foot and a half. like tall, but in quite thick. It was, yeah. It was, yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Another thing is obviously looking more on the educational side of things, coming back is obviously here in Texas, we don't go in depth on some of the things that
you've covered.
Yeah, that you've covered, obviously, like the volcanoes and different forms of sea life, mm-hmm. as you can imagine from a Central Texas school. But has the previous knowledge that you've gained all about, have you been able to still use that kind of in your day-to-day life? And
I would say there are a few random facts that I picked up from sailing that have helped me a bit, but not to the extent where, because I don't find it that applicable in actual school setting. The knowledge is useful, but I don't, we still had a curriculum for the core, like the mm-hmm. core classes, English, math. Like I did my algebra on the boat and RV, but I would say, learning about sea life and stuff, it was super interesting. I don't think it was that applicable. It's not applicable now.
True.
It was super applicable when we're out there because we did have to know, like, hey, is that a lionfish? Or, hey, is that a pufferfish? Because you don't really notice pufferfish there unpuffed. Then you go near them, they'll puff up and kill you.
It's called... So the basis that you learn in the curriculum on the boat was more... generalized to learn yes. of the life around you, while here in Central Texas we learn about Texas history,
yeah.
something that's more applicable to us rather yes. than,
I was about to say location, it's everything nowadays.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ben, really quick, as we kind of get more so towards the end of this, for people out there who are kind of wanting to do these large traveling trips for a year or two or go RVing around, what would be some like tips that you would offer to them,
please?
for the boating, my parents, we were not sailors. We never sailed before. But what we did was two Christmases before, we had, for a family trip, we did a Caribbean trip or Bahamas. So we got a boat. We hired a captain, and my parents took their sailing courses. So while we're on that, they learned how to sail. So with that knowledge, 2 years later, they were able to sail by themselves. So if someone were to do something like this, I would find a way to get either hire a captain and let them teach you how to sail. Just find a way to learn how to sail, because you don't want to be middle of the ocean. I don't know how to sail.
Fair point.
All right, I'm going to get Captain Nemo's contact information.
Honestly, Jack Sparrow would have been better, but yeah. To do RVing, it was hardest thing is to just find an RV that you like, because there are a lot of different RVs that we liked. Our RV, because me and my little brother had our own separate upstairs that we could hang out in, do stuff, do our schooling up there. And our parents had their own private downstairs. Usually an RV would just be bunk beds, like into the side. And we also completely rehauled our RV. We took everything out and put everything back in. It was a big project, but we got the RV that it was RV of our dreams, and we did it. So for RVing, I would just say find an RV that you'd like and have an itinerary, like a basic plan. You don't, because wandering is fun, but we also, our plans are centered around of like where we had to be at certain times. So like in the summer we had to be in Canada because that's, we always do a summer trip up to Canada. And say my older sister was graduating, so we had to be there for our graduation. So we gave ourselves time to do everything we wanted and be like, okay, now we're in there for our graduation. So if you want to do an RVing trip, make sure you have an itinerary.
Fair enough. Well, thank you, Ben. It's great to have you come on and kind of talk about this, especially because most high schoolers have not gotten a chance to do these incredible things. So, thank you. And are there any other questions that anyone wants to ask or say?
Yes. When you're out at sea, how is the night sky like?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that question. It was amazing. So the best times would be like when we were sailing in the middle of the ocean, nothing around us. You could just look up and see hundreds of stars. You could see
nothing's like, polluted.
Nothing's polluted. There's no light pollution. Like most of the time, there wouldn't even be clouds, and it would just be like stunning. It's probably the best like shot of the night sky I've ever seen in my life. Just that 7 days, it would always be a treat to during the night look up and see the stars.
All right. Well, again, thank you, Ben. Thank you, everyone, for coming on and doing this. We're going to have some more podcasts planned here in the future, and I hope you all enjoyed. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Bye.